Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Don't worry, I'll be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Here's a little song I wrote. I might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, I'll be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
When, it's like in what's it called? Austin Powers. When it's that when Mini-Me has a little
yes,
just the two of us.
He's got like the deepest voice.
Be happy.
I saw him, Vernon Troyer.
Yeah,
yeah. I saw him at the airport.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was probably a couple months ago now.
Nice. He is like an internet darling. He has found out how to like dominate Reddit. It's kind of funny.
Oh, really?
Every time he posts something on Reddit, it's just like, Vern Troyer! You're the best! Woo! Welcome, everybody, to the Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
GPLA has technically come and gone.
It was awesome!
Yeah, it probably was awesome.
I mean, we're recording this before it happened, but you're listening to it after it happened because we're in the weird time bubble that's recording to going live. So, yeah, I'm assuming it was awesome. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. We're also going to talk about our Eternal Masters preview cards.
How exciting.
And
two of them. We
Holy
have
cow.
Two. Blake Rasmussen, you the man.
Are the man, Blake.
Yeah, I'm so stoked. Mostly too because this is a set where everything that gets spoiled is like, you can play this in Commander. You probably will play this in Commander.
Literally, at this point, I think I've seen four cards from Eternal Masters.
Yeah.
They're all awesome in Commander.
Yeah, exactly. They're all great. So that is very, very exciting. We have some stuff to upkeep, of course. Right now, the Mana Source Wedge is doing something for the St. Jude fundraiser. He did this last year, raised a ton of money. You're helping kids. It's an amazing, amazing opportunity.
Yeah, so... you can go to twitch.tv/themanasource, and that's where you can follow Wedge on Twitch. And what's happening is from now, when you're hearing this podcast, until the end of the month, the 31st, he's doing a charity fundraiser for St. Jude Children's Hospital. And it's going to start at 4 p.m. Eastern every day. And they're going to be auctioning off magic stuff that help raise money for sick children at St. Jude Children's Hospital. It's a really great cause. We've donated some stuff. There's some Commander product that's going to be going through. In fact, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, the 25th, which is the day we're coming out, because it has to be a day late, because that's the day we can announce our preview cards.
Spoilers coming out.
Then this is the day that some of our Commander product that we sent over, that we donated to the fundraiser, is being auctioned off. So if you want to go and simultaneously get cards for Commander and also help sick children.
Ooh.
Then go to twitch.tv/themanasource. Also follow Wedge on Twitter @themanasource to get updates about it. I mean, St. Jude, you just can't have a better cause than this.
Yeah, very much so.
Wedge sent me some statistics. I'm going to read some.
Ooh,
childhood leukemia survival rates have improved from 20% 50 years ago to more than 85% today. So that's
20%, 1 in 5 would, oh gosh,
85%. I mean, that's what the research money is doing. It's helping to, you know, cure things like leukemia. St. Jude is leading the fight against influenza. Mm-hmm. So when you get a flu shot, St. Jude played a big role in deciding what to put in the flu shot vaccine that you get.
Oh, cool.
St. Jude provides all costs for patients and their families. So families don't pay for travel, expenses, housing, food, or treatment. Everything is provided thanks to donations from people just like you and me. 75% of all St. Jude's budget are donated by people like you and me.
Wow.
Even as little as a dollar helps. It costs $2 million per day to run St. Jude Children's Hospital. So it's just a very great cause. I'm glad Wedge is always supporting this and doing this every year, and we're trying to throw our support behind that. So again, go to twitch.tv/themanasource, follow Wedge @themanasource, and, you know, we've been really careful. We don't ask for anything on the show. We haven't done a Patreon or anything like that. You know, this is a way that if you've ever thought, like, man, I wish I could help the guys at the Command Zone out, this is the way to do it. Go over and give money for sick kids. That will help me out.
Yeah, it's absolutely a selfless thing to do. And my dad's a doctor, and he always was so incredibly supportive of children's hospitals because they're very specialized in what they do. And oftentimes, kids get lost in the mix. It's, you know, it's tough for some families to afford healthcare for their children, and the fact that they pay for a lot of those expenses, including travel and stuff, that's fantastic.
So go check it out. Again, twitch.tv/themanasource. 4 p.m. Right. Eastern daily until the end of the month.
Very exciting. Okay, GPLA has happened. What decks did you bring?
I think I brought my new five-color lands deck.
It's done?
It's...
I mean, yeah, I played against it. What a deck. Has a little bit of tuning to do, Josh, as you know. Especially that one game, right?
Yeah, so I've been goldfishing it the last few nights. I built it. It seems like it's okay. It's not like amazing. It needs some tuning, but I'm not going to know until I play against real decks like exactly what needs to be tuned, but it's fun so far. So, and I've been tuning up my other decks. How about you?
Oh, well, you've been tuning them up?
Just a little bit. Like, I took Chromad, and I took Rune. I took a couple others, and there's just some stuff that I never got around to putting in, like
Eldrazi Displacer in Rune.
No, because I didn't have that much time to redo the entire mana base, so I didn't do that. But I did put in, what's that sword that gives Myriad? Blade of Selves.
Oh yeah, Blade of Selves.
I put that into Rune.
Jeez, that card, I've actually surprisingly not seen it that much in our playgroup.
I just think our playgroup has been kind of slow to adopt all that stuff from that. We're a little behind it. It ends up happening, but it takes a little while to sort of,
usually it'll take one person playing it.
Yeah.
And if you play it against enough people this week, I'm sure enough people will, okay, maybe I need to get one of these.
I mean, I know that card is awesome.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is awesome.
Sorry, I blew everybody's ears out there. That was unprofessional.
The knowledge of that card being awesome is just too much to handle.
Speaking of the GP, we wanted to talk about something because it's funny, as GPLA came up and we've been interacting with a lot of people about the GP, and even Terry, our editor, actually, funnily enough, was talking about some interesting things that I guess hadn't occurred to you and I, Jimmy, but I think it'll be useful for our audience, especially more casual people that aren't familiar with how GPs work, to sort of go over some misconceptions about the GP experience.
Yes, certainly. For one, GPs Grand Prix are 100% free. They are open events for anyone to go to. Now, every Grand Prix has a different main event. In LA's case, the main event is Modern. So there'll be, I think, 14 or 15 rounds played out over 2 days in the top eight. If you want to compete in that, you actually have to register and pay to play. However, if you just want to go to the Grand Prix where the event is, usually at the convention center, there are tables everywhere. There are tons of people just milling about, talking to people, doing trades, trading with vendors, buying cards, and playing games on the side. And that is 100% free to attend. There's no lanyards. There's no system in place to stop anyone from coming into the convention hall.
Yeah, it's not like there's an outside and you need a ticket. I think a lot of people think you need to purchase a ticket. Mm-hmm. You don't. It's like a convention, except for... it's like a convention that you can just enter and exit for free. It's not like you need the badge, like you were saying, the lanyard. There's tons of people just playing Magic, and there's also side events. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't go to the GP because they're like, well, I don't want to play Modern for 2 days. If you just want to draft once, it's a great place to go because drafts are going to be firing like crazy. Or if you want to play a little sealed tournament, they'll often have many other events going on. They'll often have mini standard tournaments or mini legacy tournaments or those kind of things, which are like five rounders and they just fire when you get a certain amount of people or whatever. There's a lot of different formats, but GPs are really just conventions for Magic players.
Yep.
And even people who don't like any of those formats and just want to play Commander, I guarantee if you show up at the GP and you look for some people to play Commander, you'll find it.
Yeah, and they have all sorts of events. It's also huge for people that like play Legacy because this will be a great way to actually gather more than like four Legacy players because there just aren't that many. You can have actual like 50, 60-person tournaments, and you can go register for one of those. They run them on the whole weekend. They have events where you get to play against pros, like Foiled Again, which is an event where you get – it's a sealed deck for Shadows of Innistrad, and then you might play against Louis Scott Vargas. Who knows? And if you beat that person, you get extra prize tickets.
Oh, yeah, they get bounty events. So, yeah, you get a bounty on the pros that you beat. And, yeah, there's prize tickets for the events a lot of time. So you collect those tickets and you can go to the prize wall and choose what you want to buy, which is usually like, you know, they'll have booster packs from like all kinds of different sets. They'll have a lot of singles. They'll have like the uncut sheets of Magic cards, just tons of cool stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like a Magic carnival.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's same as like walking into a store. You know, you can just walk in and play if you want to for the most part, you know, and there's tons of vendors there, you know, just a lot of places to buy and trade your cards as well. So it's just an awesome event. And I highly encourage you, if you're in the area, just to come check it out at the very least. Maybe get in a couple games of Commander. We're going to be playing all weekend.
Yeah, and also, when you go to a GP that's in your area, you're liable to meet a bunch of Magic players that are also in your area. Yeah, so
find out about new players, new places to play.
Yeah, and meet people, maybe people that you can meet up with and play, you know, when the GP's over, things like that. It's just a really good way to connect with other Magic players in your area.
Yeah.
Super highly recommend it. I know casuals are sort of not familiar with that scene and they're a little bit reticent to try it out. Just go, bring a one commander deck, you know, just give it a shot. I guarantee that once you're inside, you'll be like, oh, this is totally not as sort of structured and complicated as I thought. And it's totally like more laid back and just fun.
Yeah, totally. So make sure you guys check out a Grand Prix if they're in your area. I'd say it's even worth a little bit of a commute because
for sure, I would go all the way up. I would drive 5 or 6 hours for a GP on a weekend for sure.
Yeah, totally. All right. Oh boy, we've arrived.
Let's do this.
We have Eternal Masters preview cards. Two of them. They both have brand new art. It looks like a theme within the entire set so far. I think we can safely say that for the most part, there's going to be new art on all of these cards.
You think all the cards are going to have new art?
I mean, maybe not at the common slot for some of them, but
so far, we've seen 4 cards.
Yep.
They all have new art.
Yeah, and one of them is an uncommon, which we'll be spoiling very, very soon.
Yeah, I like that theory. I hope that's true. I'm not ready to say. Also, one of our spoiler cards leads into a discussion about possible speculation about what else could be in the set.
Oh, yeah.
Very exciting. I'll let you do the honors, Jimmy.
All right, our first spoiler card. Drum roll, please. At Uncommon, it is Ashnod's Altar. It's an artifact. It costs 3 mana to drop, and it says, sacrifice a creature, add colorless to your mana pool. So that's 2 colorless mana, or diamond mana, as we sometimes refer to it in the new flavor text. This is also new. If you work at sawing up carcasses, you notice how the joints fit, how the nerves are arrayed, and how the skin peels back. Ashnod of Taunos.
That's a morbid.
That is.
That's a morbid quote from Ashnod, yeah. Who's a female, I believe that is a morbid quote from her.
Yeah, that is very, very morbid. Ashnod's Altar. This is 100% a commander card. I play this in many of my decks.
And you know what? It's not super cheap. I mean, look, it's not super, super expensive, but it's a couple bucks. And by the time, because I'm like you, I played in probably like 7 or 8 of my 19 or 20 decks. That's a lot. And every time I'm like, do I want to buy another one of these? Like, dang it. And there's probably 2 or 3 decks that would like it, but I'm just like, I don't need a 9th Ashnod's Altar.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's unfreaking common.
It's uncommon. Which makes me really excited because as a drafter, this makes me think immediately, oh, is there a big mana deck? Is there a deck that wants this with tokens?
Or a token deck, yeah.
Which means, like, are we going to see some big baddies? Like, is Emrakul going to be in this set? Like, who knows what could happen?
Anything is possible. Anything's possible.
Everything is awesome. Yeah, so very exciting. Ashnod's Altar, obviously, two mana for a single creature being sacrificed. The possibilities are endless here. I mean, usually you're thinking like, okay, so we have tokens. We have a bunch of 1/1s that we can sacrifice to this. Also, like we said, having a sac outlet is always important in the game because if someone tries to steal your commander, or if you're playing a Child of Valar deck, it's nice to have a way to just instantly trigger that ability.
Yep, and there's so many reasons why. We've said this before where, in theory, like, a card that just said sacrifice a creature, that's it. No, it just allowed you to sack a creature at will and had no effect.
We would play it.
it would possibly be playable because just having a sack outlet is very, very possible, or is very, very powerful. It just stops a lot of things your opponent's trying to do, like steal your stuff or exile your stuff. You don't want to get exiled. And the fact that it gives you mana is very, very powerful. Because what do we always say? Cheating mana costs is probably the single most powerful thing you can do in the game of Magic. And so this allows you to, in some ways, just generate mana from nothing.
Yeah, think about it this way. If you play a creature in turn 1 and turn 2, you play a creature that makes 2 creatures. So you have 3. Turn 3, you play this. You can just get 6 colorless mana on turn 3. You lose your board, but you could play something nuts. You could play Wurmcoil Engine on turn 3 with this.
Yeah, you could be super far ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Our buddy, the Magic Man Sam, on YouTube, really recently did a video that was called Ode to Ashnod's Altar in EDH.
Yeah,
in
it's awesome.
And it's a very sweet video, and he even compares it favorably to Sol Ring. Mm. That's how good he thinks it is.
You know, I'm a fan of that. I think in the right decks, this is more powerful than Sol Ring, certainly.
Yeah, I think it can be. I still think Sol Ring's more powerful overall, but I think it's hard to make the argument that there are certain decks where if you had to choose one, you would choose Ashnod's.
Yeah, not to mention it just sits there and you can generate it multiple times, right? With Sol Ring, you can tap it once before it stays tapped. You can't use it again. Ashnod's Altar, you can just go to town if you have the creatures to fuel into it. It's great. I think this card is awesome. I'm so excited that it's at uncommon, which means that I'm just going to have these now if I draft this set a lot and I don't need to worry about buying new ones.
Oh, we're going to draft it a lot.
Yes, I am. Oh, we are. Excited.
I already know. All right, let's go on to card number numero dos.
Oh, this is a big one.
This one opens up a doorway.
This is like the first card I think I've ever seen you cast.
Yeah, I love this card.
I played against you.
I love this card. And yeah, it opens up this anything's possible. Mystical Tutor is the card.
Woo! It's getting reprinted.
It's getting reprinted. It's at rare. It costs one blue mana. It says, search your library for an instant or sorcery card and reveal that card. Shuffle your library, then put that card on top of it. It also has, I believe this is new flavor text, the student searches the world for meaning.
Oh, it's actually the original.
Oh. This is not new flavor text?
It's not new flavor text. Well, it's sorry. This is the flavor text that you'll find on the card from the vault version.
Okay. The student searches the world for meaning. The master finds worlds of meaning in the search.
Ooh.
Just think about that for a minute.
I'm thinking.
I'm thinking. I'm sure the masters of modern guys would probably be able to go all zen on that because of their intro.
Hey, you know, the journey is, that's what you really learn from is the journey.
Yep, journey before destination.
Yes.
This is a sweet card.
Yeah, it's an instant. You oftentimes will search up a Cyclonic Rift. Mystical Tutor just says, would you like Cyclonic Rift at the top of your deck? Go for it.
Go for it. Or Brain Geyser. Yeah. Or, you know, the great thing about Mystical Tutor is that it also goes and finds the other tutors.
Yeah.
So worst case scenario, if you're like, Mystical Tutor, but I need a creature and it only gets instants and sorceries. Well, then you Mystical Tutor for Demonic Tutor or Worldly Tutor. And then you go Tutor for the creature you need. So it's one step removed sometimes, but it still works. It still can do, you know, get you the creature eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this card obviously is powerful for the reason that it is just a tutor. And any way you can get a card into your hand in a format where you have 100 cards that are not the same is a good thing.
And you've got five opponents or four opponents, and you can't always hold in your hand cards to deal with everything that's going to come at you.
Yeah.
So then when something unexpected happens, the tutor is the versatility to go get the answer that's needed. These cards are interesting. We've talked about it a little before. When it says you go and you search for the card and you put it on top of your library, one thing to remember is that it's card disadvantage. You actually used a card but didn't get a card back. You're going to have to wait to draw that card.
Mm-hmm.
That's a smaller downside in Commander because we tend to have a lot of card draw.
Yeah, and you'll technically play this at the end of your previous opponent's turn so that you can draw it so it doesn't feel as bad. But yeah, you're still tossing a card for nothing immediately.
Yeah, so something that makes it a little bit worse, you know, that's why things like Demonic Tutor are so, so good.
Yep.
Not just that it can find anything, but also because it puts it into your hand.
Yeah, and you don't have to reveal it to anyone as well.
Yeah, so that's another thing about Mystical Tutor and the tutors like this is that you have to show it. So if it's Cyclonic Rift, they sort of have a second to get ready for it. Again, most of the time you're going to do it on the end step before your turn to mitigate that, but there is the ability for them to sort of like, oh, he's going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder. Cyclonic Rift's a little bit, maybe not the best case scenario, but if it's like a counter spell,
yeah.
Well, you just showed everybody that you're going to have it. So that's not, you know, not that you wouldn't necessarily do that. It's just like, if it's Cryptic Command, well, it's going to be harder to get somebody.
True, unless you're like me and just tell everyone you have Cryptic Command so they won't attack you.
It's true. It might just be good to do that.
True.
You brought up some interesting things, which is how well it works with certain commanders.
Yeah, so if you have a commander like Jelava, Helava, you can tutor this and then cast your commander so that whatever you tutor up is going to be exiled by her and you're going to be able to use it. So obviously you can just cast kind of a game-winning card if you really want to, you know, and more specifically, this goes very well with Narset.
Yeah, any card that cares about what's on top of your library, this is a possibility. Now,
yeah. You can grab Enter the Infinite. You know, I think that's like the big one for Narset to just combo off with.
I think like Melek would probably want something like this too.
Mm-hmm.
He cares about what's on top of your library. So you can just go put the right card there. And then it is like Demonic Tutor, except better at instant speed for one mana. Because
right.
if you're going to have access to that card right away, in fact, you don't actually even want it in your hand for some of these commanders. So that makes it very, very powerful. I love this card. I basically play it in almost every deck that has blue. Almost.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's no reason not to. Now, of course, some people might argue that, oh, you know, if you're playing the 70%, if you want to lower the power level a little bit. I just like having the ability to say, like, maybe I won't die this turn because I couldn't get the thing into my hand. And I usually use tutors as a reaction as opposed to being on the aggressive with it. So in that case, that's why I run in almost everything.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I think tutors in general are sort of against the 75% philosophy. I don't know. That's not my theory. It's Jason's. So I'm not sure what the rules are, but I believe that's how it works. Yeah. But we don't necessarily play according to that philosophy. It's great. I'm not telling anybody to do it or not to do it. For me, yeah, I like to have the versatility to go get Cyclonic Rift if I need that, or to go get Brain Geyser if I need cards. Because a lot of times,
yep.
that's the great thing about it, is Mystical Tutor can sort of double also as a card draw spell. So if it's right. the last card in your hand, or close to it, you can use it to refill your hand. Wheel of Fortune or something, go get that. Which is super powerful, just so you don't run out of gas, and don't end up just like sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah, and that's always nice. Flexibility, as we all know, and it's something that we preach constantly on the show, is to have flexibility and be able to know how get access to your cards when you need it.
Okay, so the big question.
Yeah.
Because this opens a door of possibilities. So the big question is, we've seen this card, and now we're recording this out of necessity, you know, almost a week before it's going to play. So in the meantime, some cards may have been spoiled. I'm assuming they have, but at this point, we don't know any other cards in the set besides Wasteland, Force of Will, and Ashnod's Altar.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to get the quote-unquote cycle of these? Because there's Enlightened Tutor, Worldly Tutor, Vampiric Tutor are all basically the same version of this for the different colors. So Enlightened Tutor gets an artifact or an enchantment. Worldly Tutor gets a creature. Vampiric Tutor gets anything, but you got to pay some life. But they all do the same thing where they put it on top of the library.
Yeah, I would love that.
Especially Vampiric.
Vampiric Tutor is the big one that I'm thinking of.
It's super expensive.
It has not seen much print. It is a very expensive card because it sees a lot of play in Legacy formats. Yes, please.
Enlightened Tutor is expensive too. Worldly Tutor is a little bit on the cheap side. These are all not super cheap though.
Tutors in general, yeah, are going to run up the price tag a little bit.
Especially these hyper efficient ones.
I mean, holy crap. Could you imagine? It would be like a freaking magical Christmas land if that was the case.
It would be so awesome because... I just don't have enough Enlightened Tutors. I don't, you know, Worldly Tutor and Mystical Tutor are a little bit cheaper. They're still not super cheap.
Yeah.
But Enlightened Tutor is like pretty expensive.
Vampiric
is like prohibitive.
Yeah, I own zero.
Yeah, I own zero and I'm just not willing to pay that amount for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'd rather just have Demonic Tutor. yeah, I don't know. I really hope so. That would be incredible. But, you know, maybe edging on the bit of wishful thinking, I think, because they're all such high-value reprints. Wizards may not want to do that all in one fell swoop. But
we have seen in the past where they did just a couple of the Command series. They didn't do the entire cycle. You know, they don't have to. They don't feel the need to have to reprint the entire cycle. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And I'm talking about from Modern Masters.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know either.
I would. I'm very excited to see potentially, but who knows?
I'm gonna hope so. I'm gonna say yes. Dang it,
you're
yes.
Gonna say yes.
I'm gonna say yes.
Oh boy,
because
well,
I'm an optimist.
I'm looking for that Vampiric Tutor.
This is gonna be so sweet when I'm right. Okay, there's a really good chance that it's Enlightened Tutor and Worldly Tutor, but not Vampiric Tutor.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, whatever. Is Vampiric Tutor on the reserve list or anything like that? Like,
I don't think so.
Am I sounding really dumb right now?
No, I don't think it is. And you know what? I'm voting for you to be right because I think it would be great.
Well, I appreciate your vote.
Yeah, that's all. It's like, that's how I base things. I'm just like, this would be great because it would be great. Yeah, Vampiric is not on the reserve list.
So let's just do it.
No worries. Yeah.
I mean, they've already done it or done did it. I mean, it's not like I can convince anybody at this point. From 2 years ago, let's do it. All right.
All right. So we're doing it. Hopefully they're all in there. If not, Josh, gosh, man, what a prediction. You got so close. So very, very
close.
Like
us just covering all the bases.
Yeah, exactly. You have to say a little bit of everything. Like, Josh, you were right. Amazing. So that when we cut together our supercut at the end of our careers, we'll be like, man, remember that one time Josh correctly predicted this whole cycle?
Yeah, remember that time Josh was a psycho?
Yeah.
That was sweet.
That was sweet. All right, so those are our spoilers for Eternal Masters. We have Mystical Tutor at rare and Ashnod's Altar at uncommon. Check out the sweet new art. If you're not looking at the art right now, you could be if you're watching the video on youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast.
Awesome.
Ooh, so awesome.
Plus foil Mystical Tutors. Oh, man.
Foil new art Mystical Tutors, because I have one from the vault, but it's the old art, and I want the new art.
Of course you have the old foil.
Why not?
Because you're a foily guy.
I am. Foiled again. All right. Let's move on to another subtopic here. Recently, an article came out called Opponents Are People Too, and it's written by Steve Rubin, who won the last Pro Tour. And the article showed up on Steve Rubin's blog, and his blog is called A Symphony of Snores, which I thought was kind of funny.
Steve, rename your blog. Nobody wants you don't want to advertise your thing as something that's boring.
True.
Okay.
Very true. Anyway, he made this article, and it sort of got around the internet for a little bit, tossed around Reddit and stuff, and it's very well written, and it addresses a very important point.
Yeah, I mean it's long.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think it's I think the point he's making, though, is really, really interesting, really good, needs to be talked about a little more. And the point that he's making is, like, why are we so mean to our opponents? And he doesn't just mean, like, when you're face-to-face with them. He means when you're talking about games that have occurred, you know.
Yeah.
People often refer to, like, and then my idiot opponent did this, or my opponent. They're very negative in general, very often, about their opponent and, like, what they presume to be their intelligent level or
based on their plays or whatever.
Yeah, their skill at the game and blah, blah, blah.
And how you don't respect them because of it.
Yeah, or, and how they just got lucky.
Yeah, that's the worst part, is when you're berating how bad your opponent was, how dumb they were, and they beat you. So you have that extra layer of whatever on top.
Yeah, it is pretty pervasive.
It is very pervasive,
I think,
actually.
In just gaming culture in general, and definitely in Magic. And as I was reading, I was like, man, yeah. I've done that. I've heard people do it. It is kind of weird, and it is kind of bad.
The big thing is that we allow each other to do it, and we don't really... We want to sympathize with our friends because they're the ones that lost. They're the ones that we know what they're playing for. We know how much they prepared or how much it means to them. And so hearing them lose, especially if they're saying, well, I lost to someone that I shouldn't have lost to, you know, you want to have empathy for your friends. But you're actually kind of just negating empathy for people in general. Could you imagine ever saying this to someone's face? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some people that do, but definitely it's not super... I mean, it made me think of how often just in life your brain is like fiercely protecting your own mental health. Mm-hmm. And it's doing that in the way of like, well, I need to, in my mind... degrade my opponent because otherwise my own self-worth will somehow be damaged, you know?
Right.
And that's, I think, what a lot of this stuff is. And man, that's kind of despicable. I mean, and I've done it, and I probably still do it. It's the same thing where people like are like, you like that band, you know?
Yeah.
Or you eat there, or blah, blah, blah. You wear that. You know,
I like that.
All that stuff is just like trying to make yourself feel better or above them or superior to them for some reason, because that's why really what your brain's trying to do is just give yourself confidence, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, having an opinion is a good thing. I think you should always have an opinion. You shouldn't just say yes to everything or whatever. But at the same time, if that opinion is at the expense of someone else, especially if it's like, I don't know, the idea of talking behind someone's back is not pleasant to me in general. I do it all the time still, and I can't help it, and it's something I don't want to do. It doesn't make me actually feel any better in the long run.
But in the moment, I mean, I'm just saying that as a way to understand why it occurs. But then when you step back and you look at it and you go, man, yeah, I wish I didn't do that. And you can think somebody's clothes are something you wouldn't want to wear without thinking they're stupid for wearing them. You know, you can think somebody, the band that somebody likes is not music that you like without thinking that they're an idiot for liking that band.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, too. There's so much, especially in geek culture, too. I've never met a larger group of inclusive and not inclusive people in my whole life.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Where the whole thing is like, look, we're this underrepresented group of people. We got bullied in high school. Now we can stand together. Oh, you like the new Ghostbusters trailer? You can go
You're an idiot.
Yeah, you're an idiot. It's like, whoa, hold on. How does that make them any worse or better of a person for something that you just don't agree with? I mean, this happens all the time, and it's something that's very pervasive in geek culture. It's a bummer, but that's something that I think we need to address before it gets out of control, because I think being that entitled to your opinion and thinking it is the top of truth in the world is not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting to, when you're doing that stuff, take a step back and be like, why am I doing it? And a lot of times you'll find, if you search yourself down deep, oh, I'm just doing that to make myself feel good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm putting that person down because it makes me feel like I'm above them just in the moment. But is that really how the type of person that you want to be? You know, I had this conversation, and we've never talked about it on this show, when I went on the Commanderin podcast, and we were talking about one of the really, really prevalent things in EDH is to sort of call certain plays or types of plays like mean, or to call people, you know, to sort of be like, if you want to be a jerk, then you do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I was really railing against it on that show of just calling people names or attributing the person who's doing something in the game with a negative, you know, I don't know, handle or title, being like, that person's mean, that person's a jerk, that play is jerky, that play is mean. And I'm like, it's a game. No play is mean.
Yeah.
It might not be the type of gameplay that you like, but it's not mean. It's not it doesn't say anything about the person.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really important point, is that we do assign a lot of character descriptors to people based on what they do in a game. Now, this is different than like someone on Call of Duty actively screaming at you over voice chat and insulting you and calling you names. It would be like, oh, this person killed you a bunch in this game where you're supposed to kill other people. That was mean of them. It's like, actually, that was just them playing the game at their level. And that's what ended up happening. And I think a lot of, because it is a social game, it's multiplayer, and people want to have fun, it's anything that I think people see like, oh, you're detracting from the fun of it, thus you're not a good person. Like, it just jumps to that sometimes.
And if you think about it, I'd bet you in, you know, a large percentage of those cases, the person is actually just mad they're losing or lost. And that's what they're doing. They're doing what we talked about earlier. They're trying to make their mental psyche is actually trying to make themselves feel better by going, well, that person's just mean. I wouldn't want to win like that.
Yeah.
And they're not better than me. I just choose not to play like that.
Right. And it's interesting because that is sort of the opposite end of, let's say you play someone, they beat you, and you think they're a worse player. So you go off and you call them an idiot. And if you went to that other player and asked them, well, hey, what is your goal behind playing the game? And they say, it's to relax. It's to de-stress. I play it because I have a really busy work life and I want to do it for this. That could be the same person that also, in a game where they lose brutally to a crazy combo deck, go, wow, that's not how I play. That person's an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, like, it can go both ways. And I think it's really important just to think of, like, why does someone play the game? It could be completely different than why you play it. And that's something to be, I don't know, just recognized. It's okay that not everyone plays the game the same way you do. There's,
I think,
literally nothing wrong with that.
It's just good to separate, like, the game from the person. Like, you know, don't, like you said, attribute a bunch of character qualities to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all learning. You know, we all listen to this podcast. I listen to podcasts just because I want to get better and I want to be a more fun person to play with and against, because I think we can spread a little happiness in the world if we keep playing card games.
All we need is love.
Love
is all we need.
And a couple of magic cards.
I mean, and here we are, and we've sort of preached about this, which I feel a little bit bad about, because I'm not great at it, and I really wish I was.
Right.
So I'm the first person to say, like, geez, I've totally done these things. And
that's a huge part of it.
It's something I want to work on, right? And it's also conducive to becoming better at Magic, because as soon as you stop attributing that to, like, the person being a jerk or the person being stupid or blah, you can actually look at, okay, these are the conditions in the game. What can I do in the game without worrying about, like, all the emotions of that kind of stuff to do better next time?
Yeah, which is surprising when I find people getting salty on, like, Magic Online, because you can't actually see the other person.
Yeah.
It's as though you're playing a computer, and that's how I try and treat it. Every time I play someone on Magic Online, I'm not playing a person so I can get mad at them. I'm playing a computer that is set at a certain level, has a certain percentage for making mistakes, and just go. Play your best. Don't worry about what the other person is in real life, how good they are, whatever. It's not going to make you play any better.
It was weird. I was playing the other night, and it was a tight match. I was playing in one of those sealed leagues, mm-hmm. and it was a really tight match, and it came down to like a couple of plays by me near the end, and the guy was like, you know, he typed in the chat, like, nice top decks, you know, and then quit, which is not a big thing. Like, I've experienced far worse as far as people, like, typing right. mean things at you. And I was just like, well, that guy's doing that thing, right? Like, instead of, it could have been a girl, I don't know, that opponent is doing that thing where instead of looking at the game and going like, oh, I wish I did this, or I should have blocked here, or maybe I should have traded instead of blah, 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 or saved my combat spell right. to another... They immediately went to, you got lucky.
You got lucky.
Well, then how are you going to get better for your next game?
Just get lucky in response, clearly.
I mean, is that your strategy? Because that's not a good one. Yeah, and I was just thinking, like, it's too bad because that person, they've hit a little bit of a wall, at least right now, where instead of learning from a mistake or two, and we both made mistakes. I mean, I looked at that game because I like to watch my replays, and I was like, oh, yeah, I made a couple of mistakes. And I knew my opponent made a couple of mistakes, too. Mm-hmm. And instead of them doing that, I'm sure they just wrote it off as, like, that person got lucky, on to the next game.
Yeah, and actually you'll find that the higher-level pro that you look at for Magic, they are more and more like this, where they're able to separate the mechanics of what they're doing on the board with who they're playing against. Because mm-hmm. everyone's at such a high level, it doesn't do you any good to get upset about luck, to get upset about variance and all that stuff, because it's a part of the game. So once you are able to focus in more on what you're doing and how you're playing the game, you will ultimately get better, both in the game and I think in life, because luck is all around us in whatever form. And even if you don't believe in the idea of luck, the idea of chance falling in your favor or not is happening all the time. And how you frame it in your mind, I think, really determines how you live your life.
I think that games and gaming are very good at teaching us lessons for life. And we've talked about this on the show many times, of how you sort of port a philosophy from life into Magic, or mm-hmm. from Magic into life, or from poker into life, or basketball, or anything that you do. And this is another one of those things. And the ability to take a lesson learned in a game and apply it to your life, if you learn that, then you don't have to make... There's this great saying, it is a wise person indeed who can learn from another's mistakes. Well, this is very similar mm-hmm. in that you learn from a mistake that you did in something that's sort of a simulation, and then you apply it to reality, yeah. and all of a sudden you didn't have to make that mistake in reality.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. Gavin Verhey, friend of the show, told me once, and I think he's written this on his blog too, that Magic has helped him improve all aspects of his life from both a professional and a personal standpoint, because it helped him, you know, who's able to take lessons from one thing and apply it to the next. Obviously, not everything is a one-to-one applicable thing.
Usually it's metaphorical, right? Yeah. It's why you can read the book The Art of War, and then all kinds of like corporate CEOs read it. But they're not actually like sending soldiers into battle, but they right. can extrapolate the same lessons to like corporate negotiations or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
All right.
All right, so make sure you guys read that article if you have a chance. Also, Steve Rubin does make a good point where, you know, if you are the kind of person that has the chutzpah or the gall, I don't know, to stand up and say something, like, you know, make your voice be heard if you see this kind of behavior happening with your friends and you're not comfortable with it or whatever, because it does take a little bit of speaking up to sort of reverse negative behavior, especially if you're doing it yourself. Maybe you just have to say it out loud, like, hey, guys, I know I did this, but it doesn't make me comfortable when you do this because I feel this, you know. So make your voice be heard.
Make your voice be heard.
That's right.
I like it. All right. To the listeners, this is a good one. We need a lot of responses here.
Plenty, please.
It's topic time. So we're always interested to hear what kinds of things, topics you would like to hear us talk about. So we'd like you to tweet at us, to email us, to put in the comments section, what are some show topics or some things that you would really like us to tackle on the show?
Yes, please. Because we'll tackle it.
We definitely will.
We'll get there.
Many of our shows have been prompted by emails or comments mm-hmm. or discussions on Twitter, and we're always looking for the stuff that the listeners are interested in, that we have an opinion or a take on, that we can make a show out of, and, you know, hopefully you guys got some good ideas.
Yeah, and good ideas also always come up when I'm playing a game with people. So I'm hoping to get a few ideas from GPLA this
weekend. We should get a lot of ideas because we're going to play a lot of games.
Yes, I'm very excited to play against decks from all around, too, and check out what the different metas are like, what the different deck builds are, and my favorite part, cards that I never knew existed. I'm going to be keeping a nice text list of that.
Yeah, that's the best. Yeah, my phone's always on the notepad, and I'm like, what's that card? Writing it down.
Yeah.
Putting it into this deck soon. All right, time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I have something.
Yeah, hit it.
It's a mobile game. It's called Clash Royale. Now, this is not a small game. There are a lot of people playing this game.
This is also not a paid advertisement, so you know.
No, they haven't paid me. It wouldn't be worth it
for them.
Have
you paid them at this point, Josh?
A little. But you know my philosophy, where is that once I play something for more than about 10 hours, I'm going to throw some money towards the creators.
Yeah, exactly.
Believe that's right. So Clash Royale is made by the makers of Clash of Clans, which I also play. And it's sort of like a 2D tower defense game, but it's one-on-one. It also has some card collecting aspects to it. It's a strategy game. It's fun. You can play a game in 4 minutes or so. I don't know. I've just been playing it, and it's fun.
Yeah.
It's not awesome. It's not to the point where like I play it late into the night or anything, but it's just a good time killer in between other stuff.
It's always nice to play, have some game on your phone that doesn't take a huge amount of time out of you, and you can just sit down, play a couple minutes, and you're done. And it seems like that has sort of solved.
Yeah, anytime you're like waiting in line or you're like, you know, just waiting for something, you can just pop on and play it.
Yeah, awesome.
Clash Royale, there you go.
Awesome, awesome.
Like
awesome.
They need, they're making like $110 a month or something. I heard on that game.
$110.
$110 million.
There you go. There it is. $110. My goodness.
$110 million. Million. Okay. I forgot. Right. I just forgot like six zeros. Duh.
Pretty close.
It was almost the same.
Yeah. Speaking of six zeros, you guys should check out our sister podcast. That has actually nothing to do with six zeros.
Are they zeros or are they heroes?
They are heroes. Speaking of six heroes, and by six heroes, I mean two heroes.
This is awesome.
Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they host the Masters of Modern at the MMCast on Twitter. They're definitely going to have a lot to talk about on their next episode, which is going to be post-GPLA, I believe. I mean, I'm really interested to see what takes. This is the first big modern GP since the bannings, so I'm really excited to see what takes it all down, what the metagame looks like. If you guys are interested in that at all, or just really great analysis of competitive modern Magic, check those guys out, the Masters of Modern. You can find them on the podcast tab on rocketjump.com/podcasts.
Our editor is Terry Robertson. Way to go, Terry. Hope you had fun at the JP. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG. Jeffrey does the cool animation videos at the open of our show, The Soul Ring, and every once in a while in the middle. You should definitely go check out, throw some love to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG. He's everywhere these days. Channel Fireball, the Community Super League, all over the place.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Hope to see you at GPLA seeing you at GPLA.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Man, this is happening more often.
Yeah. It's just whoever takes the bat first. Actually, I think it's dependent on who shouts out the Master of the Modern and who says the editor of the show is on Jeffrey Palmer.
I need to find the, you know how if you want to like walk in step with somebody, you have to do that little skip thing.
So yeah,
that you
can, yeah.
I need to find the skip thing that allows me to get back ahead of the peace thing so that I can say peace. But it's
you
too
just,
late now.
You can just throw something in there. It's like 1, 2, 1, 2, 1. You have to just get another 2 in there so that it comes back to me to say, all right, guys, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
We're such gamers. We're trying to game this system.
Well, usually you announce the Masters of Modern. Very rarely do you call out Terry and Jeff. I mean, that's why Complete was like, speaking of six zeros,
that's why.
Here I go. Jimmy's taking a dive in. Yeah, maybe he'll get there.
That's why I totally stuttered over the Terry thing, because I was like, wait, I'm saying this. Jimmy usually says this. What? The world is upside down. Nothing makes sense. Anything is possible.
All right. We will see you guys next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.